I'm George Kittle, and you're listening to the Niner Guys.
Welcome, everyone, to the Niner Guys. Todd Kleinhines, Jerry Sue with you again for another podcast episode. And I got to be honest, I almost went back to our previous episode just to clip the intro because it's going to be the same thing. What an incredible win with a clouded injury that was so devastating at the time. Since then, we've gotten some better news, but wow, what a just back-to-back weeks of craziness, I tell you. But let's jump right into the GOAT Tom Brady coming back home to California, buying 100 tickets. I'll say I was in the stands, and there were some Bucks fans, but there was probably more Brady Patriot jerseys than any other Bucks jersey besides Brady. So clearly Brady had his contingent out, but he was outplayed by Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy, who has swung so far into the national limelight that I don't know. He's getting so much credit now, and we're going to break down and get into it. But Jerry, we talked 3 weeks ago going into this stretch. Dolphins, Bucks, Seahawks. The Niners need to win two of these games. They really got to come out of this three-game stretch with two wins. That'll put them to a good position, you know, for the stretch run. They've already accomplished that, and they've done it in incredible fashion. So jump right into the Bucks. Give me your thoughts. Give me your thoughts going into the hyped-up Tom Brady versus Brock Purdy matchup.
Dude, forget Tom Brady. Can you smell what the Brock is cooking? Like, wow, man, this kid is incredible. The stones to audible out of that first play of the game, only to get absolutely tattooed by the blitzing corner. But then he proceeds to not only lead the Niners to a touchdown on the opening drive, but he then tacks on three more tutties thereafter. That's right. We're talking touchdowns, not field goals, touchdowns. Even after throwing what could have been a pick that was negated by a penalty, Purdy came right back on the very next play to throw a touchdown to Brandon Ayuk just before the half. And that impressed me on so many levels because, one, he didn't even see the touchdown because he was under pressure, but stood in the pocket anyway and took a shot and still put the ball where it needed to be. Two, that was the second time he stood in there and got smashed while throwing the touchdown, the first being the 27-yard dime he dropped to Christian McCaffrey when Tampa sent an all-out pressure on him. And three, instead of playing it safe with the rookie, Kyle Shanahan kept his foot on the gas and went ultra aggressive, completely undeterred by the near interception. Kyle had so much confidence in the kid that he dialed up that double move to IU for the touchdown. Now, who knows if Purdy can keep this going when the league gets a book on him and defenses adjust, but for now, it sure looks like the Brock star is not just Purdy good, but he's already better than, dare I say, Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance, especially the way he moves with such nimbleness, like when he rolled out and sort of juked to evade that linebacker to complete the pass to Debo. I mean, I had flashbacks of Joe Montana making that same type of move. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Purdy's Montana, but the way he plays gives me some Montana-esque feels. And while we're on the subject of GOATs, Tom Brady, for the first time in his Hall of Fame career, lost to a first-time starter. So, how do you think he liked them apples, Todd?
You know, everything you said is you're echoing what most of the media, most of the fans are talking about. I want to pump the brake just a little bit because I don't want to set this guy up for expectations that can't be reached. But I will say, what he did in that game, all those things. The way he read defenses, the way he – now, you complimented him on checking out of that first play of the game, calling an audible. I don't know. Was the audible the right call since he got blasted on a...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it was the right call. I'm just saying the kid had the cojones, yeah, which is probably why he gets the nickname that he does, yeah, to say, you know what? Hold on. First play of the game, I'm checking out of it.
Yeah. So, but I think that comes with, hopefully that just is a learning experience, but you're right. He hung in there, took the hit, got the penalty, marched them down. Again, we talked about his just great play on the blitz in the Dolphins game where he hung in there, hit Kittle for the first down to keep the chains moving. That led to points. So we know he can hang in there. We know he's a tough kid. The thing that I guess surprised me, only because, look, I didn't break down a lot of Iowa State Brock Purdy film leading up to the draft. I didn't, you know, I watched him in preseason like we all did. I thought he looked better in the games and opportunities than Nate Sudfeld did, which is, you know, kind of what led to Sudfeld being released despite, you know, having $2 million guaranteed and Purdy hanging in there. I know we had a discussion and lots of fans had discussions during that time of just cut Purdy. Put him on the practice. Who's going to claim Brock Purdy? Well, maybe there might have been a coach who knew, dude, if this guy gets cut, I would love a chance to develop him. So, again, all these things that, you know, the fans and the media wonder about, like, oh, who's going to claim Brock? Maybe they just knew something with, like, we cannot expose this guy for the possibility. And we talked about, we're like, really, is it going to be a big loss if Brock Purdy – great, we're going to pick up the next, you know, the guy picked one before, one after, or the free agent after Brock Purdy. But Purdy's ability to move and not scramble, not Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson scramble, but his ability to, like you said, just ole that defender who came running and just put on the brakes. The guy kind of flew by. He ran – the naked bootleg well, and not like you saw Tom Brady try and run one time during the game and it just looked like he was running in cement. And we've seen Jimmy kind of move a little bit and try and escape, but defenders always close those gaps quickly. Brock didn't have the gaps closed quickly. And I think he demonstrated more athleticism than anyone anticipated. And again, this is just him moving in and around the pocket and doing the things that, look, this is what we all said we wanted Trey Lance to be. Throw the ball, but be able to keep plays alive. Move in the pocket. Roll out just enough to give your offensive weapons time to get open. And he did those things.
Yeah, I remember watching Brock Purdy at Iowa State. And, you know, maybe part of the issue from my vantage point is that because he was at Iowa State so long and he played so long that perhaps I even caught glimpses of the earliest version, so I wasn't super impressed. But I'll tell you, I mean, this guy isn't – it's the weirdest thing, right? Maybe it's just because the talent around him is so much better. But it's not like he didn't have any talent at Iowa State. You know, he had David Montgomery early on. Then he had Breece Hall, which, you know, early on with the Jets, he looked really good before he got hurt. Charlie Kohler, he got drafted as a tight end, and I think in the mid rounds, right? So it's not like he was completely without talent at Iowa State, and he looked good, but just like your good college quarterback, probably the same way I felt about Kirk Cousins, which is kind of funny because
we're going to get into a lot of Kirk Cousins on this.
But what I was going to say is that I had to go back to the training camp. I took some video when I went to watch the practices. And again, he didn't wow. So, you know, it just didn't feel like he needed to be on the roster, that he could have made it beyond cuts. But I'm thinking forget about like possibly losing him. This is like the son Shanahan never had. I feel like, I mean, the dude has looked like anything but a third string rookie quarterback, right? To be thrown into the fire against Miami and come up huge like he did last week, and then picking up where he left off to beat the Bucs this week against a Todd Bowles defense that you know is aggressive. And I'm sure he tried scheming up anything and everything to confuse Purdy. And all Purdy did was score the highest quarterback rating out of all quarterbacks this week to beat Bulls and Tom Brady. I mean, seriously, Brock's been nothing short of amazing, I think. I mean, he's been completely impervious, I should say, to pressure. A 76% completion rate this past week? That's absurd. Spreading the ball around at 8 different receivers. And I believe overall he's been like 18 of 20 or something ridiculous like that on third downs. You know, which is why he's already better than Jimmy G, as I mentioned, because he's good at making those off-script second reaction plays. He doesn't seem to get antsy and is good at extending plays like the one where I mentioned where he rolled out, juked the linebacker to make a pass. And he's a lot more mobile, as you mentioned. But mobility works for him instead of against him. Like on that 2-yard touchdown run, he veered away from Devin White to get into the end zone untouched. Whereas I feel like if it were Lance, I'd be willing to bet that he'd actually try to run through Devin White and perhaps doesn't even get into the end zone. And it obviously is unfair to judge Lance with his small sample size of play, but Purdy just also seems to make quicker decisions. So again, I know it's still early in the process, but as I mentioned, I think Shanahan might have just found his Kirk Cousins 2.0.
We'll get into more Purdy, Kirk Cousins, Lance in just a little bit. But let's talk about the game because there were other aspects of this game, including Christian McCaffrey.
Were there?
There were things that were obvious, like Christian McCaffrey's 120 yards rushing, his receiving touchdown, his basically put away run rushing touchdown late in the game. You saw George Kittle early on kind of be Purdy's go-to guy on that drive to move the chains on third down. There was just things throughout the game besides Purdy that you saw different or new. And you mentioned Kyle being more aggressive and small sample size, maybe an overreaction. And the fact that Purdy has 2 touchdown passes over 20 yards in the air, which is more than Jimmy had in 2 years. Jimmy had 1 in 2 years. We always talk about Jimmy throws the crossing pattern, the slants, those that's his bread and butter. And then he relies on the guys to be the Yak brothers. You know, they're going to pick it up. Purdy hangs in there on that double move to Ayuk, the wheel route to McCaffrey, hung in there, threw it deep, got the touchdown. Now, I think part of that is you've heard this week just the amount of swagger and confidence that Purdy has. So that's very possible what it is, that he just believes, rightly or wrongly at this point in his career, that he can make those passes. Jimmy maybe not so much didn't believe it, but just thought, I'm going with the safe pass. I'm checking it down more. I'm going in that Alex Smith mode. I'm not going to go for the reception that has a 15% chance. I'm, you know, downfield, I'm going to go 70% chance and try and move these chains around, which is why, you know, for the past couple of years, you would get 10, 12, 16 yard scoring drives that took 6, 7, 10 minutes from Jimmy, because that's what they would do. Brock scored, you know, in 2.5 minutes, you know, took him down there because, and granted, it's not all Brock because it's the play calling as well. Kyle called how many straight passes to start that game? I was shocked. I thought, look, we're going to let Brock do his thing, but Kyle's not going to drastically get away from who he is. And by the end of the game, it settled into his usual run-pass ratio. But to start that game, Kyle just came out throwing, bootlegging, play action. And, you know, it took a while, and maybe that's what he needed to do, knowing the Bucs were going to go, look, load the box, stop the run. There's no way that we're going to let, you know, Mr. Irrelevant beat us. That's what we're going to do. So Kyle tried to, you know, out-scheme Bulls by going, okay, well, we're going to go the opposite. We're going to go with the short passes. We're going to go with the things that are going to move the chains just to loosen you up. So those are some of the things. But look, it's it would be remiss if we do not talk about the defense, because this defense has gone a month and a half now of just, I mean, historic levels in terms of what they are doing statistically. We questioned them a little bit with their self-given name of Pick City early in the season, because like, well, are you guys really? Or, you know, but they came up with another two interceptions. They got a fumble late in the game. Here are some stats. They have allowed the fewest yards overall in the NFL. They have allowed the fewest points in the NFL. They're the only team in the NFL that has not given up 1,000 yards receiving combined this year. They're only allowing 15.2 points per game. And that's including the big 44 spot that they gave to Kansas City. And they've only given up 20 points twice this year. And it happened to be back-to-back, the Atlanta game and the Chiefs game. And they're only giving up 4 point yards of play, number one in the NFL. This defense, despite not getting a sack, and that had a whole other thing that Brady knew he had to get rid of the ball. That he was not going to risk trying to go deep as much as Tampa does. Hey, we're going to go deep. He saw him shuffling his feet, getting rid of the ball. I mean, it's why he threw 55 times and got what, 250 yards? I mean, you're talking about like 4 or 5 yards every time. And the Niners were content to let him do that and make the tackle and make it so difficult on that team to even move the ball with any consistency, that the defense again is just, I think we're starting to take it for granted that, oh yeah, they're only giving up 2 touchdowns maybe this game.
Yeah, you know, it was clear Tom Brady did not want to get touched, which is the reason why the Niners had 0 sack-a-roonies, because he just kept getting rid of the ball so quickly. But the defense still brought consistent pressure and made great plays when they needed to. Loved the Dre Greenlaw interception.
Yes.
Loved that Jimmy Ward caused a fumble. Loved that Tayshaun Gibson got a pick. And if not for that fluky touchdown catch, which ricocheted off a couple people before Gage came down with it, the Niners would have had another shutout, which is crazy. And you mentioned that the Niners gave up, their biggest point totals in those couple of games. Like what you said, it was Atlanta and obviously Kansas City, right? But Atlanta, I want to say, was the one where Nick Bosa did not play. So I think this record that people always like to talk about, oh, Jimmy's like got this record of blah, blah, blah when he starts. I think that's more of a Nick Bosa record. When Nick Bosa is playing on the team, that's when the Niners are operating on, you know, full cylinders, all go, because he's the one who drives that defense, obviously. But real quickly, going back to what you were talking about in terms of the offense and McCaffrey and Purdy. So, and Alex Smith, you mentioned Alex Smith, and it's funny you mentioned him because I heard a podcast that he was on this week, and he was talking about how with the way that an offensive coordinator or a coach sends in a play gives that quarterback a sense of what that coach thinks of him. So after he said, I'm like, yeah, wow, it makes a lot of sense, because you can sense that Kyle, his trust level, right? He's big on trust or distrust. Didn't trust Trey Lance at all. Trusted Jimmy barely, but gives his full trust already to this rookie out of Iowa State. First game, right out of the chute, he's slinging it 37 times. I think it would take 3 games before he allowed Trey Lance to throw it 37 times,
yep.
You know? But like you said, in addition to all the buzz around Purdy, we cannot overlook the role of our run game, particularly Christian McCaffrey, you know, because in his 120 yards that he accumulated on the ground, he averaged 8.5 yards per carry, which is huge. And this was the 11th career game of his where he had a receiving and a rushing touchdown, which is 4th all time. So, and in his 6 starts with the Niners, McCaffrey has over 750 total yards, 7 touchdowns, one of which was a passing variety. And the Niners are 6-0 So, you know, I'm guessing nobody's quibbling about how much we traded for this dual threat now, right? Because he's been such a key to this team's offense and will continue to be with Debo gone until the playoffs. But thankfully, J.P. Mason also stepped up to shoulder the load to help the team gain the – I think they had a total of over 200 yards on the ground against Tampa. In fact, I get a chuckle whenever I see him and Brock on the field together, one being the last pick in the draft and the other one being an undrafted free agent, yet both are making a big impact on a Super Bowl contender in their rookie year. Just unbelievable.
Absolutely, and you're right. There is no there's no denying that the trust Kyle has in Purdy starts at a much higher level than it did with Trey Lance. And for whatever, again, who knows what's actually going on behind the scenes and what these coaches and everyone has seen happen, whether it be in the meeting room or how they interact with one another. But Purdy has something that Kyle really loves. And before we get into why he loves him and who he's going to be compared to, I just want to say that no one is quibbling about the McCaffrey trade. They cannot. I mean, they just can't. I mean, the Niners are not in this situation. They are not on a six-game winning streak. They are not one game away from winning the division with their third quarterback of the season. Heck, Josh Johnson, the fourth quarterback of the season, got in and iced the game with a pass to Danny Gray. So you cannot, no matter what happens, quibble with the McCaffrey trade. And we said it at the beginning, this is a swing you need to take, and it was taken. But mentioned it earlier, is Brock Purdy the Kirk Cousins that Kyle has been searching for? And just to lay it out there, when Kyle first came to the Niners, it's obvious, you know, it's been reported, he didn't even look into Mahomes or Deshaun Watson because he wasn't going to draft a quarterback. What he was going to do, he was waiting for the following year when Kirk Cousins became a free agent to bring Kirk Cousins on board because that was his guy from his time in Washington. Obviously, that didn't happen. Kirk Cousins went through the franchise tag a couple times before signing his big guaranteed contract with Minnesota. So Kirk Cousins never came to the Niners. And people always talked about, well, he's going to take Mac Jones in the draft because that's who he wants. Let me throw something out at you, because nothing like a good conspiracy or at least thought exercise, that we always talked about. Was it just a smokescreen? What was it? Why did so many people get this wrong? We're talking about the Mac Jones, Trey Lance pick. And people talked about, no, Kyle had to be talked into Trey Lance. So let me ask you, is it possible that he was talked in, that he really did want Mac Jones and was talked into Trey Lance, but still always had his eye on something else? And when that something else came up, Brock Purdy this last year, that is what he saw as his fallback plan. And that's why he ran Trey like he did, not treating him like the fragile franchise quarterback that everyone wanted him to, but like, this is how I'm going to play him because this is how I can, this is the only way I know how to use him.
Yeah, when you put it like that, and when you think back on it, it does make sense now why he used Trey Lance the way he did. Whether or not he had to be talked into Trey Lance, I could see that. I could see that Mac Jones was the quarterback that he initially had his eye on. But I just think it's really tough to say that that's the guy that he was going to go with at three when they made that trade. I don't. Now, maybe I'm just biased. I don't think that he would have been in love with Mac Jones enough to trade up to three. I think it was, I really like Mac Jones. I'm fine staying at 12 to get him. But if you feel like we want to get, you know, evaluate other options, then let's move up because this could be our only chance. And they looked at the, you know, this year's quarterback class. Maybe they didn't look at Brock Purdy. I'm not sure, but at the time, but yeah, certainly. Or maybe they did. They're like, hey, we can get this Brock Purdy guy late in next year's draft. So let's swing for the fences on this Trey Lance guy and see how it goes. And if it doesn't go, then we could always fall back on Brock Purdy. Who knows? But yes, I'm with you. I think Mac Jones is definitely the guy that he looked at first. I think Trey Lance came in later, but I don't think that he had to be talked into him in a sense where it was like pulling teeth. Like he didn't really want to take him, but he just went along with the consensus. But I think that every coach has a quarterback that works well in his system. Like going back to the Joe Montana days, would he have been as good had he been on any other team? Most likely not. Mm-hmm. And I just think that when you look at Brock Purdy, he's probably the perfect quarterback for Kyle Shanahan and vice versa. This is the kind of quarterback Kyle Shanahan is most comfortable with. I feel like Kyle Shanahan, even though Trey Lance is more talented than Brock Purdy physically, he doesn't know how to coach Trey Lance. He doesn't know how to use Trey Lance. Yeah, you know, so whether or not Purdy is the next Kirk Cousins, whether he's better than Kirk Cousins, or if he's another Gardner Minshew, I'm not sure. I think it's just too early. But I'm not ruling out that if he is another Kirk Cousins, that this could become another RG3 Kirk Cousins type of thing. And if a team were to offer up a lucrative draft package for Lance in the offseason, I'm sure the Niners would listen.
Well, and let's you know, lay out just a little bit of history for anyone who hasn't been up on their Commanders / Redskins quarterback history. And that is when the Redskins at the time drafted RG3 number 2 in the draft, he was the Heisman Trophy winner. He was coming out. He was very Trey Lance-like. He had a great arm. He was mobile. He ran, you know, he had lots of positives going for him. And the Redskins, whether it be at the behest of Daniel Snyder or whatever, like they traded up to the number 2 spot in the draft only to draft Kirk Cousins out of Michigan State in the 4th round, which people thought was absurd. Like you just traded up, and tell me if this sounds familiar, you just traded up for your franchise quarterback, and yet you're backing him up with a guy that you spent draft capital on and are now more enamored with him. Now, RG3 had a much better start to his career than Lance did. RG3 came in as a rookie, won the Offensive Rookie of the Year before getting injured, and then the legend of Kirk Cousins developed from there. But the fact that the Redskins took two quarterbacks in the first 4 rounds, I mean, was it really, he's just the best player available on our board? And yeah, we know we just took a guy who you would think is our quarterback for the next 10 or 12 years. So we're taking his backup now. It just seemed, again, that this is a Shanahan trait. Like, look, we're not being forced, but we're being heavily emphasized, or whatever the connotation is, that take RG3. And then the coaches and the scouts and Mike and Kyle Shanahan decide, you know what? This Kirk Cousins guy, he's really good. So we're going to do this for the owner because, hey, we work for him. It's his money. But from a football standpoint, we're still going to build it like this. So
not just really good, but it really fits, right? Could really fit in the system. I would say the main difference, though, with Brock Purdy is that he was Mr. Irrelevant, so nobody gave it a second thought when the Niners drafted him.
Let me give you the quick thumbnail sketch of Brock Purdy's scouting report coming into the NFL. And for much of this, you look at it and go, yeah, that fit. 4-year starter and a team leader. Needs to find his rhythm. Makes his way through his progressions really well. Strong hands for easy pump fakes to move defenders. Generally an accurate passer between the numbers, confident throwing over linebackers in front of safeties, good toughness, good anticipation as a runner, and willing to dive to move the chains. I mean, that's his scouting. Those are his strengths coming out. Now, his weaknesses, He lacks pocket setup quickness. He occasionally leaves big plays on the table. He lacks timing to beat NFL corners outside the numbers. He shies away from tight window throws, and his confidence and consistency have been issues. I definitely don't buy into shies away from throwing into tight windows, because he's in two starts, he has tried to thread it in, and he has a number of times. Now, the one thing that I will say that we have not seen, we saw the two deeper passes outside the numbers to Ayuk and McCaffrey. We haven't seen the deep out pattern, the where he just drops back and it's 15 yards, that long throw that requires a little bit stronger arm so corners can't break on it. We haven't seen that yet. Now, maybe, again, good coaching by Kyle. We're not calling that play because we know that is, you know, the thing he's going to struggle with. However, we're going to call double moves like Ayuk did, leaving, you know, the defender, you know, planted in quicksand. And all you got to do is get the ball out there. In fact, you know, a little bit more would have been nice because you thought, oh, he's waiting on it. He's going to get tackled at the two. But, you know, he got it and fell into the end zone, which was great. So I got to say that this scouting report is living up to what we've seen. And like you said, Kyle has just taken all those strengths and accentuated them. He's used his mobility. He's used his pocket presence. He's used his ability to go through progressions, which we talked about with Lance, and we talked about it for whenever we see quarterbacks, young quarterbacks. He's not going through his progressions. He's locking onto his first receiver. Why don't we have more receivers as impact? Because the quarterback's not going to go through all this. He's going to lock onto his first target. Whereas if Purdy's strength, probably coming from experience 4 years in the Big 12, is he can go through his progressions, you don't need to slim down the playbook at all. You can give him everything because he's going to be able to go one, two, three, hit your receiver.
What's crazy about Purdy is that, and now maybe we don't know all of the behind-the-scenes stuff when it came to Trey, when it came to Jimmy, but I don't know if you heard the story about that touchdown to Brandon Ayuk. But basically, Purdy and Kyle Shanahan got together before the game. They had their own meeting. They talked about the game plan. And that play wasn't even a part of what they had practiced or installed. And so when it was called in the huddle, Ayuk was a little confused. Like, I know the play because it's been called in the past, but it wasn't one that we'd plan on using. So he actually did a double take and sort of looked at Purdy, and Purdy's like, no, it's going to you. So that one wasn't even one that he had to go through his progression. He just said, look, you just got to do this double move. And so Ayuk, as he described it, was like, you probably didn't notice, but everything was really messed up on the play. Like McLeod was like running in motion. But yet Purdy was the one who settled everybody down. Like, look, I know what I need to do. Brandon knows what he needs to get done. Ray, just stay here. Just stand right here. Don't go off sides. Right. And then that's, you know, and even without practicing, that's what's crazy. Right, with this rookie, they didn't even practice it. Kyle just said, look, I want you to run it like this. This is going to happen. And yes, that's the big knock on him. And that's what I saw, like during training camp and what, and even in college, that he just doesn't have that NFL arm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that one, I'll cut him some slack because he had to hitch. And then the defender was bearing down on him. He sort of had to lean back a little, right? So he couldn't get everything on it. Right. But that's the thing. He doesn't have the big arm. That's for sure something that I don't know if he can build on that in future years, but that's something that for sure he doesn't have right now, which I'm sure was one reason why he lasted until the last pick of the draft.
And one thing I'm noticing with him, and I agree, he doesn't have the big arm, but he's got the strong arm, if that makes sense, because he throws it into tight windows in that 10 to 15 yard range with defenders kind of draping over receivers, yet he gets it into those guys before it gets knocked away. So it's not like he lollipops it, but yeah, he doesn't have the, I don't know, high end strength to get the ball 50 yards down the field on the air, but boy, he can zip it in on a line, you know, in that mid range. So,
I didn't see it in this game, but I know in the last game against Miami, he would drop down. Like he would throw it at different arm angles to get it through those windows. I mean, that was impressive. I don't want to say Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes-esque, right? To be able to, you know, do that. But also another thing that I'd heard about a lot of NFL rookies is that they will say being just in the a pro NFL style offense or, you know, infrastructure, I'm assuming it has to be a pretty good infrastructure, like good coaching, but they learn more just within camp than they learn in 4 years at college.
Yeah.
Right. So you never know. It could just be that where once Brock Purdy got into Kyle's system and learned quarterbacking under Shanahan, something clicked and it took him to another level. Cause I've heard people who watched him at Iowa State also say, like, yeah, this is not the same guy. Like, he's gotten a lot better just in within the short time span.
Well, I mean, he's also kind of your classic. He was a late bloomer in high school. He didn't have any offers in through his junior year until he became Arizona's Gatorade Player of the Year and then got his college offers. And he, again, we talked about it before, he had an offer to go to Alabama, but would have sat at least 3 years before maybe getting his chance. But he elected to go to Iowa State, where he was going to be able to compete and play right away. He set so many Big 12 records, like nearly every Iowa State quarterback record. So this is a guy who he doesn't flash on the scene right away, but you can see if he gets the coaching, if he gets the ability to learn and develop, he has become, in stop so far, he's become really, really good. One thing we got to talk about, though, is the loss of Debo. That was a little bit of a metaphorical rain cloud to go with the literal rain clouds that were hanging over Levi's late in that game against the Bucks. But Debo gets twisted down, his leg caught under his ankle caught under a defender, his knee kind of buckling, parted off. I mean, he was down for a while, and then he stood up for like a second, like trying to step, and just he went right back down. And that's when they called the cart out. It was very eerie, obviously, being in the stadium when you see Debo's down, and you're just thinking, what does this mean? And then the cart comes out, which is never a positive sign. This is not soccer where the cart comes out and these guys go out and they come right sprinting right back in a minute later. Like, it's just not going to happen. So when he was carted off, it was, you know, again, much similar to when Jimmy went down. It's like, what does this mean? This is not good. Come to find out, it is basically a sprained ankle and a sprained knee, which they're saying is a 3-week-ish. That's the technical term from Kyle, 3-ish week, you know, injury. So I'm hoping it's more of a 4-week injury where the Niners basically win against Seattle and can put Debo on ice and fully rest him leading into the playoffs. Hopefully they don't need him to, you know, nothing happens to anyone else and they're going to need him to come back. What it does do is it puts more pressure on, I don't know if it puts more pressure on McCaffrey. I think McCaffrey will continue to get his regular workload, but JP Mason's going to need to put in some runs and tough yardage runs earlier in the game instead of just icing it away like he has done the last couple of weeks. But losing Debo, what does that mean? What does that mean for the Niners?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if we can allow you back into that stadium because you went to the Miami game, Jimmy G gets hurt. Go to the Bucks game, Debo gets hurt.
I'm Nick Bosa. All I do is get wins.
I don't want to see anybody else get hurt, dude.
Not
but anyway.
It may not be pretty. Yeah. We just come home with wins.
Yeah, I mean, during the game, the injury looked pretty bad. I automatically thought it was a knee, the way he was completely torqued in the way he was. I know they're saying he'll be back sooner than expected. I don't think he'll be ready until the playoffs. I mean, that's I don't know. It looked kind of bad. I mean, if he can't get back sooner, great. To me, the question now is, do the Niners pick up anyone for the stretch run? I mean, I'm sure OBJ is the popular name. Right. But teams seem to have cooled on him given his prima donna attitude of not wanting to play regular season games and still wanting to get that big contract despite coming off the ACL. And with T.Y. Hilton apparently going to Dallas, do the Niners, you know, like, is there anybody else the Niners can still pick up? Like, I think a guy like Will Fuller is still out there. I don't know if there might be any interest in that. But speaking of injuries, you know, our D tackles are kind of in a bad spot, it would seem. I mean, Kinlaw's still out. Ridgeway, again, hurt when you were at the Miami game, and now you got Givens and Hyder out. Mm-hmm. Seriously, what are you doing to these guys when you go to the games?
I'm asking them to play hard. Play hard.
But I'm just wondering if they're, you know, looking at other options or, you know, sticking with like McGill or an elevating Spence. Cause I know that, I think that Sheldon Richardson and Malcolm Brown are still on the mark, or, you know, they're just still free agents. There are a lot of these guys that are just out there, surprisingly, that are signing this late, but they're out there. So what do you think the Niners are going to do?
Well, and according to Greg Papa, the Niners have been targeting the Washington game as the return of Javon Kinlaw. Take it for what it's worth, you know, considering how long he's been out. But, you know, a rejuvenated or simply a Kinlaw back into the rotation of defensive linemen could be productive. I think Eric Armstead's return has been underestimated just because of so many other things have gone on, whether it be Jimmy and Debo's injury, the arrival of Brock Purdy, CMC's, you know, great games. But Eric Armstead in the middle of that defense is giving them, he's giving them push. He's giving them, he's occupying blockers. He's doing so much that doesn't hit the stat sheet, but you can see every time you see the pocket collapsing, it's Armstead taking two guys, pushing him in the back. So I like that. I was going to ask you about OBJ because before I really had no interest in signing him. It was not even a luxury piece. It was like he wanted to ride the coattails of whichever team was, you know, had the best chance to get to the Super Bowl because that's all he wanted to do. He's like, I want to be the guy who collects another ring type of thing. And then when Debo went down, I thought, well, you know what? Probably not a terrible thing to put him out there. Granted, if he's healthy, he won't even physically work out for teams yet. He's just, oh, trust me, I'm good. Yeah, you know, at $7 million for the, you know, next couple months, I'm going to need a little bit more than your word for it that you're good. I'm going to need you to come in and run a route and show me that you're not limping, you know, after, you know, 15, 20 practice snaps or something like that. I've been, you know, kind of not on the get OBJ bandwagon for so long, and probably now would at least entertain him a little bit more. Again, he's got to be healthy. I'm not giving him any massive amounts of money, which seems to be what he wants. But if he's not even going to be ready till the playoffs, well, that's when Debo's supposed to be ready. So then it becomes kind of useless.
Well, look, if he's interested in playing football, maybe if he wants to play with OBJ, I mean, sorry, with Debo, if he's mm-hmm. willing to come in at the minimum and prove mm-hmm. himself, I'd be open to it. But it doesn't sound like that's the case. It sounds like he may not necessarily be in it just for the football anymore.
No.
So if that's the case, then I pass. But I think what's actually interesting about this Debo thing was the tweet that, of all people, Jerry Rice sent out there about being somewhat critical about having Debo run up the middle. And I know we've talked about Kyle running his guys up the middle. But it's interesting because on this play, I do believe it was designed for Debo to go outside.
Absolutely.
Is that he just chose to cut it back inside. So this one wasn't on Kyle. However, it does show the riskier nature of running inside. And I think that's what people have been saying when they call out Kyle for dialing up these inside runs for guys like Debo and Trey Lance. You know, and I know they're bigger and more athletic than perhaps the average guys playing the respective positions, but they're still not built like Tom Rathman or William Floyd. In other words, they're not playing fullback for a reason. And if you play like Jimmy Ward or Diomede Lenore at like linebacker, I guarantee you they'd be increasing their odds of getting hurt as well. Now, of course, some will argue that football's rough. You can't ever predict when guys get hurt, which is true. But ramming them up the middle, I think everybody can agree that it's just not ideal for certain players, especially those who aren't necessarily built for it. Especially when you know these players like Debo are the most effective out in space. So it's not so much blames. I think it just illustrates the opinion that, you know, you're asking for trouble when you dial up a lot of plays for certain guys to run the ball inside, as we've seen with Debo, with Lance.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that argument, but I gotta disagree with, you know, Jerry Rice, just because after watching that, the entire offensive line is pulling to the left on essentially a sweep type play. He sticks his foot in the ground and tries to cut it back, which is kind of his positive. He tries to get one-on-one with somebody. And if Debo versus a defender one-on-one, I like my chances with Debo. However, it wasn't one-on-one. It was, you know, probably one-on-two, and, you know, they made the play. I will also say that for Jerry Rice, that is, you know, and people who are, you know, not in the run players up the middle type of mode, Christian McCaffrey broke the 30-yard touchdown to ice the game on a designed up-the-middle run. So, I agree. Football is a rough sport. You never can account for injuries. Ask Kyler Murray, who tore his ACL non-contact on natural grass at home. Like, nothing said, oh, well, obviously it was the turf, or those things can happen at any time. You can't play scared. And I wonder if you ask Kyle Shanahan if he would tell you, I am dialing it back. I want to run Debo 15 times a game. I'm only running him six. Like, type of thing. Like, if he's already telling you, guys, I'm already, you know, doing this, scale back this so we don't get in this situation. But, you know, as it is, there's always, you know, for every, you know, Debo injury up the middle or Trey Lance up the middle, you get, you know, let me tell, because knock on wood, if Christian McCaffrey had gotten hurt on that run, everyone would be saying, why are you running up the middle with a, you know, kind of your, one of your main guys when you're up 28 to nothing? You're up four touchdowns. Why are you putting him in danger? And that's why, because Kyle doesn't view it as danger. He views it as, well, if we block this correctly, this is going to be, you know, a big play, and we're going to turn a 28-point lead into a 35-point lead. And, you know, at that point, then we can really scale back. Then we start replacing, you know, starters. We're giving guys bigger breaks. So I hear all that, and it's always going to be a talking point, especially with Kyle, since he plays such a physical brand of football. But I'm glad that Debo, you know, kind of, he didn't elude all the injuries, but he seemed to elude what looked like really, really rough twisting and torquing on the knee of an ankle.
Right. I mean, it wasn't catastrophic, which is good. I do recall last year, the only reason why Debo became the wide back was really out of desperation, right, which is, I think, another reason why maybe people could feel that Kyle should scale it back, because we shouldn't be in that desperation mode anymore.
Sure. Yep. The only other thing that I wanted to mention regarding the game was, and I actually said earlier, Josh Johnson comes in for his third stint with the Niners and 14th, you know, not different organization, but 14th organization, hits a pass to Danny Gray for Danny Gray's first NFL reception. And it was on fourth down, and it iced the game, and it was victory formation after that. So,
was that 14 including XFL, or is that excluding XFL?
I think it's excluding. Cause I think thought I had initially saw 17, and they were talking about 14. So I'm like, well, maybe that's just 14 different NFL transactions that he's had.
Well, speaking of guys who've been around, you know, the block a few times and had multiple tours of duty with the Niners, unfortunately, Dante Johnson, I believe, mm-hmm, also got hurt, and I think he tore his ACL. So
yep.
That was kind of sad.
And he was just activated to the active roster that morning, type of thing. That is a bummer, and it's, again, it's tough on the depth, but an NFL season. Look, as a fan, I'm always 17 games, great. 18 games, great. But it just becomes not who's the best team. It just becomes a war of attrition to see which team can just survive to the end. That's what it is. Which team has enough talent at the end of the season? Talent at the beginning, talent at the middle does not matter if you don't have the talent, you know, at the end of the season. So I think you're going to get 18 games in the very near future, but these are the types of things that, you know, I think you've been calling for a number of years. You got to expand these rosters. You got to have, you know, a bit, you got to have these practice squad players as active roster players so they don't get plucked by other teams. These guys have to be able to have a mechanism to keep talent on the field, keep their guys on the field. So yeah, we'll have to see about that. Anything else about the game?
I think we've pretty much exhausted. Have we talked about Purdy yet?
Brock, the quarterback. Yeah.
Rock star.
Let me ask you about the quarterback who was on the other side of the game, that being Tom Brady. For the second game that I've watched, I watched him closely the week before because he was on Monday Night Football and then obviously played the Niners, and he looked beyond pedestrian. He's never wanted to get hurt. He's never wanted to get hit. He's always been the I'm falling on the ground before anyone even gets a chance. If you saw a quarterback play like that early in his career, you'd cut him. You would say, this guy plays scared. This guy won't, you know, can't handle the toughness that's required in the NFL. And I'm not saying Tom's that. Tom has proven, you know, he can do things. But the question last week became, well, Tom's a free agent after this season. He would love to come back to the, you know, the Niners, play in front of his parents, play with the team he grew up. I mean, how many times did they show him in his mom's arms at the 82 or the 81 championship game type of thing? So with everything you know right now, today, December 13th, Jimmy's going to be a free agent. Trey's coming off his ankle injury. Brock Purdy looks like Brock Purdy has, you know, we just described. Tom Brady wants to come play for the Niners. You get to sit with Shanahan and Kyle and John Lynch. What's that conversation like? How are you? What are you discussing with them on any of these? Are you simply crossing any of them off? Are you investigating options? How do you sit down with the front office with that? If this plays out like it does?
Well, I still believe that under the right circumstances where Brady is surrounded with talent and competent coaching, he's still got something left in the tank, which is why I'd not rule out Brady potentially signing a one-year deal with the Niners to close out his career. I mean, he's seen this defense up close. He's seen how this offense can be a well-oiled machine. I mean, if he wants to try and go out on top, there's no better place than to do it in San Francisco. Plus, his parents are not getting any younger, so if he wants to play in front of them for one last full season, this would be the opportunity. I would certainly entertain it. I know you may not necessarily be in that camp, but I think that the Bucs are in such bad shape that it looks worse than he actually is, which could potentially help the Niners in terms of, you know, if Tom were to be interested, it would have to be on the Niners' terms financially and whatnot. However, as it stands, you know, the Raiders and a reunion with Josh McDaniels seem to be a viable option. But that's only because of familiarity, you know, and if not the Niners say no to Brady, because I don't think he'd be winning if he signed in Vegas. That's how I look at it.
Okay, go back to the Niners real quick. Obviously, you just give Brady the starting job. I mean, you got to think, I mean, I have to believe that there's some variables included because, I mean, Niners are going to the playoffs. What now, does it change if Brock goes to the playoffs and just loses his first game? Does it change if Brock gets to the NFC Championship game? Does it change if Brock gets to the Super Bowl? Does it change if Brock wins the Super Bowl? I mean, it's got to be hard. I mean, you got to remember, the Niners passed on Brady, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago when he was a free agent at 42 years old because they thought, he might be getting a little old. We're going to stick with Jimmy. Now you got 3 years later, if you're coming off of a deep playoff run, a Super Bowl appearance or a Super Bowl win, that's got to make it hard. And does that mean you put Trey Lance, the third pick in the draft, as your number three quarterback? Does that mean you put Brock Purdy, who just led you deep into the playoffs, as your third quarterback, all for Tom Brady? I mean, again, it's a lot of hypotheticals in there, a lot of variables, but obviously that discussion is kind of circulating in the air.
Yeah, I think short of getting to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, if either of those scenarios happen, then the Brady signing is no longer part of the equation. I think if Brock Purdy gets the Niners to the Super Bowl or wins the Super Bowl, then I don't even think that Trey Lance would be a part of the equations from a starting. Like it would be Brock Purdy's job to lose. But short of that, I think it wouldn't be a bad thing for Brady to be here for a year. I think given how we've seen Brock Purdy be just a sponge for learning all the nuances already under Kyle, I feel like to do it for either of those guys to do an apprenticeship under Brady for 1 year would just do wonders for where they are already at. So again, I'm biased. You know that I wanted to sign Brady over Garoppolo 3 years ago. So I just feel like, don't say no again, buddy. Don't do it again. Don't make that mistake again.
As of right now, I will pass on Brady. I will ride some other combination of quarterbacks into next season. But all it does is continue to make the Niners an interesting story narrative through the playoffs, the Super Bowl, and into the offseason. So we spent a lot of time on the Niners, but there were a lot of interesting games. Swing us around a couple that were intriguing to you because there were a lot of things that came out this week that either were head scratchers or made you say, wow, or whatnot. Go ahead.
Well, it was a crazy week, starting with Baker Mayfield being released by the Panthers, then being picked up by the Rams and having barely cracked open the playbook and still being able to lead their practice squad level team to victory over the befuddling Raiders. And then, as you mentioned, we ended the week with Kyler Murray blowing out his ACL in that non-contact scenario. And then in between, you got Steve Wilks making a case to be the Panthers' permanent head coach after beating the Seahawks in Seattle and being just one game out of first in the NFC South. And then you have the Jets seemingly being completely off the Zach Wilson bandwagon, because even though Mike White was being completely destroyed by the Bills' defense and needed to be hospitalized afterwards, Saleh just kept White in the game, except for, you know, those snaps where he had to play the backup, being Joe Flacco, not Zach Wilson. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But I am sure that Patrick Mahomes is from a different planet, because that ridiculous underhand flip pass on the run to Jerick McKinnon for that touchdown was ridiculous, which really is another example of why it's so hard to defend Mahomes unless you're the Bengals. And despite Jared Goff having a Pro Bowl season and Jameson Williams catching his first touchdown pass, it was offensive lineman Penei Sewell who stole the show with 2 minutes left on a 3rd-and-7 play. Crazy Dan Campbell sent Sewell in motion, who then ran a short route, made a great catch, and then dove to seal the Lions' victory over the Minnesota Vikings. And just like that, folks, your Detroit Lions have gone from 1-6 to 6-7 are in the playoff hunt.
The only thing about that that I'll disagree with you with is I don't know if he dove for the first down as much as
he fell.
Chris Berman said stumbling, bumbling, fumbling over the first down marker, but it was fun to see. You hit a lot of the things that piqued my interest as well, starting with Baker, which led me to, is Baker playing for a contract with the Rams right now? If Baker looks competent or does well, whatever it is in these last four games with the Rams, is he playing for a contract with the Rams, considering the things that I've been hearing about Matt Stafford injury and he might not play next year and he might reach like those types of things? Is Baker making a play to become the starting quarterback for the Rams?
Baker is auditioning for all teams except for the Browns and the Panthers, basically. yes, absolutely. But, the Rams, for sure. I think that's why the Rams claim them, because they wanted to see what he's got. And as we've seen, the Shanahan system, McVay, I mean, if you're able to grasp that system and function within that system, it can really help you as a quarterback and it can really help your career. So I think if it were up to Baker, for sure, I think if he would love to have a great rest of the season, get another contract at minimum to be the backup to Matthew Stafford. But like you said, there's some rumblings out there that Stafford's not doing well with, I think, was it a neck?
Neck, yeah.
Did he have neck surgery, or is he just out because of the neck?
He's been out. I don't know if he's had surgery. He's been out because of the neck, yeah.
Right. So, but it sounds somewhat ominous. You don't want to be, mess around with neck injuries. So who knows? I mean, and the Rams don't have draft picks.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I don't cheer for the Rams, obviously. I certainly don't cheer for Baker Mayfield. I'm cheering for the Rams and Baker Mayfield. I want Baker in signing with the Rams in the Niners division for the next 5, 7, however many years. Because Bosa against Mayfield twice a year, I'm in. I will sign up for that because, then I can really go pound him, crush him, take him out type of thing, those types of things. But on the flip side, on the Raiders side, I had to contact a few of my Raider friends and said, some of that's on me. I took the Raiders as my lock of the week. And in our last podcast, I even laid out all the reasons I shouldn't. It's a short week. They're on the road. And I said, none of that matters. There is no way the Raiders are going to lose to John Wofford or Baker Mayfield on 2 days of knowledge. I said, there's just no way. So I had to take a little bit of that. But you mentioned the Raiders. Are we sure Josh McDaniels is a good head coach? And I say that because the team has blown, 4 or 5 13-plus leads in the second half. I mean, again, historical collapses throughout the season. So something's got to be there because it doesn't seem to be for a lack of talent. They seem to have enough talent. We've talked about the playmakers on offense. We talked about Max Crosby. Something isn't working. And I got to think some of it has to land on Josh McDaniels' plate that the Raiders are falling. Now, this may lead to, hey, Mark Davis wanted Tom Brady a couple years ago. Tom Brady's now going to be available. We're going to reunite him with Josh McDaniels. We can easily flip Carr for a draft pick or two. So that might be the Raiders' plan, but that whole situation and scenario is really interesting. You mentioned the Panthers. Panthers rushed for 223 yards. I got to think that bodes well for the Niners move going into Seattle, that the Seattle defense allowed, the Panthers to do that, because it can't be because they were scared of Sam Darnold doing crazy things in the air. So the fact that the the Panthers were able to devise a rushing scheme to pick up that many yards has got to be, you know, have Kyle licking his lips as to what he can design to keep things moving with McCaffrey, with Mason. Shoot, we might even get a Tevin Coleman sighting carrying the ball this week. Other things that caught my eye. You mentioned the Lions, and you focused on the Lions' positivity, which, again, the Fightin' Dan Campbells have been entertaining from the jump. They've been entertaining since Hard Knocks. They were entertaining before the season started and only to get into the season. But the Minnesota Vikings are 10-3. They hold the number two seed in the playoffs right now. They have a negative point differential, which only goes to explain – their wins are razor thin. They're winning by one score. And when they lose, they lose. Like their losses aren't as competitive as their wins. So, again, I said for weeks, I am not scared of having to go play the Vikings in Minnesota if that's what it takes. But now that the Vikings have lost to the Lions, the Niners are within one game of that number two seed. Now, the Vikings don't seem to have a major stumbling block, I guess, because their next four games include the Colts, the Giants, who have fallen on real hard times. The game I think they might trip up is going to be at Green Bay on New Year's Day before ending the season with the Chicago Bears. And at that point, are the Bears just playing for the number one draft pick and in the right to draft Will Anderson type of thing. So could the Vikings trip up? Obviously they could because they just lost to the Lions. But if you look at that with something to play for, I don't think the Vikings are going to trip up. There's not an obvious trip up space unless Aaron Rodgers, you know, rises up to become the quarterback and not want to go out on such a losing note. So the Niners are going to need to run the table, which they can. You're talking about Seattle and then a long week to prepare for the Commanders, then the Raiders on New Year's Day and the Colt McCoy-led Cardinals, who at that point, if they haven't already packed up for Cancun, will definitely have be packing up for the Cancun. So the Niners can definitely run the table. They need the Vikings to lose one more game. And if that's the case, if the Niners and the Vikings end in a tie, the Niners get the tiebreaker by virtue of a better conference record. So if the Vikings fall one more time to anybody and the Niners win out, the Niners will get the number two seed. Now, they'll still, if it goes chalk, we'll play the Vikings, except they'll be playing at Levi's. So the Niners still might have a little bit to play for in these last 4 months. So
Niners definitely have a number of trap games later on in the season. And, you know, but with the Vikings, I mean, their defense is just dead last. Yeah. I mean, I think they said that they're the first team in NFL history to have 10 wins, but to have also surrendered more points than they've scored.
Yeah.
So if it walks like a fraud and talks like a fraud,
right,
you know.
Let's hit the Seattle preview just real quick, because there are a couple things that seem to bend in the Niners' favor. I mentioned the fact that Panthers just ran for over 200 yards. That's got to be a positive for the Niners, considering what they like to do. The team is going to leave tomorrow on Wednesday after their walkthrough, get up to Seattle, spend the night, have another walkthrough late Thursday in the hotel just to go over their last-minute game plans before taking the field Thursday. The Seahawks are also the second worst against yards after the catch. So talking about, again, what do the Niners do well? Get the ball in the playmaker's hands and make things happen. What does Seattle not do well? They don't stop. They don't tackle the receiver once he gets the ball. So giving up the runs and giving up the yak yards, you know, lean in the Niners' favor. The Niners, however, are going up to Seattle, which is never easy. It hasn't been for a decade. Things are different. I will say, though, Geno Smith, these last four games, has not been the Geno Smith that we saw the first four games where he was really lighting it up. Still got to contain Metcalf and Lockett. You still got to play, you know, sound defense. You still got Purdy. Hey, This is Purdy's first road game, and what an environment it's going to be for him to, you know, be. And the Seahawks are desperate. Seahawks have to win this game, not only to have a shot at the division, which I think is kind of out of their grasp now, but to have a shot at the playoffs. So Seattle's going to be a desperate team, and we know Pete Carroll can motivate and coach them up. So short week, Brock Purdy, Niners. What do you think?
Yeah, last year the Seahawks were already looking ahead, yep. You know, last week to the Niners game, or if their defense is really as bad as you mentioned, hopefully it is the latter, so the Niners can take advantage. Because for all the reasons you mentioned, I'm a little worried. You know, I know Purdy's been phenomenal, as we've said time and time again in this podcast, but it is a short week, as you mentioned. He's got that oblique issue, which yep. I was kind of surprised to hear after the game, and he hasn't played in Seattle before. Mm-hmm. And he certainly hasn't been exposed to the insane cheating that goes up there in the Northwest from pumping in the deafening but fake crowd noise. I'm sure they must do that, because I don't believe it. I don't believe that they could be the loudest. And I know they talk about the stadium configuration and all, but I firmly believe they pump in some crowd noise. And then also to have their players come off the sideline in the middle of a live play and jump in illegally to make a block or tackle. I don't know if you remember seeing that. Daryl Taylor against the Raiders a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right. And of course he wasn't even flagged, because the refs are either idiots or they're on Seattle's payroll. I don't know what goes on up there, but for whatever reason, they get away with all sorts of crap. But either way, you know, the Cheat Hawks will stop at nothing to win. Cause like you said, their backs are against the wall with their playoff hopes on the line. You know, so the Niners will need to be ready for anything, fake punts, fake kicks, any other chicanery from Pete Carroll. Because again, like you said before, this game, if the Niners win, they seal the division.
Yep. Yeah. And we talked a lot early in the season when the Niners were having their struggles about, oh man, is Mike McDaniels, you know, like, look what he's doing with Miami. Look what Sean McVay's doing, McVay and the right. Come the end of the season, Shanahan is the one game away. He's one game away from winning the division and becoming only the second team to lock in a playoff spot, you know. But McDaniels and the Dolphins have hit hard times. McVay and the Rams obviously have hit really hard times. So I think that the play of Shanahan early on, the overreaction of, oh my gosh, what's going to happen, has hopefully tempered a little bit of the fans. I don't know. Venom towards him, I guess, is probably too strong, but six-game winning streak with positive things looking forward. You got to love that. Let's get to the lock of the week, because I mentioned I took the L by picking the Raiders. You squeaked out a win.
Yeah, I almost took an L.
You almost took an L, which I don't know. I don't know which L would have been worse, the Cowboys losing to the one-win Texans, or the Raiders, you know, dropping to the Rams. But you took the Cowboys, so you pick up the win. Where are you going this week?
Yeah, I know it's a trap game for Dallas, but dang, I cannot believe the Cowboys nearly lost to the one-win Texans.
Should have lost.
And they should have lost.
Should have lost. If Texas, yeah. If Houston could run a proper play on the goal line instead of having their quarterback roll the wrong way and no running back taking the hand, they could have lost. But hey, Cowboy, at this point in the NFL season, a win's a win. So Dallas gets the win. You get the win. So where are you going?
All right. Well, let's see which team and fan base I can mess with this week.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like the Niners to get that 2 seed in the playoffs. So let's make the Vikings my lock of the week. After all, it would be funny if they lost to the Lions and Jeff Saturday's Colts in back-to-back weeks. But I don't really see that happening. So Minnesota Vikings, my lock of the week.
No, that the Vikings – well, two things. Vikings are my lock of the week, and you've already taken the Vikings in week 9.
Oh, did I?
Which you picked up a win with the Vikings previously. So Vikings have already paid dividends for you.
Interesting. All right, well, let me take a look at the schedule. and get back to you. Do you want to go with your lock of the week?
Yeah, so my lock of the week is going to be the Vikings for similar reasons that I mentioned about the Seahawks. The Vikings have to win. The Vikings were, I don't know if they were cruising, but they were firmly secure in that number two spot, you know, knowing, hey, we're probably not going to catch the Eagles, and we're a couple games up on the Niners, so we're in control of our own destiny. But by losing to the Lions, the Vikings are now in that situation that I just described, that they can't afford to falter, because they can't afford to fall into a tie, because they're going to lose that tiebreaker to the Niners. Now, Kirk Cousins and everything offensively, I don't know, just it doesn't start clicking until halftime, because so many of their wins have come in the second half. With that said, Jeff Saturday is just not good. He continually has in-game head coaching mishaps, whether it be challenging, calling timeouts or not calling timeouts, game management at the end of the game. So I just don't – I think the Colts did all they could against the Raiders by rising up to support Jeff Saturday, but – they're just not good. And if you have a not good team playing against a team who's desperate, I think you're going to have to take the Vikings like I am.
Boy, who should I take? I'm actually tempted to take the upstart Jacksonville Jaguars after seeing Dallas just nearly soil themselves. Because, you know, I mean, last week, Trevor Lawrence became the youngest player in NFL history to throw for 350 yards, three touchdowns, and run for a touchdown in a game.
There you go.
You know, and they're sort of nipping at the Tennessee Titans for supremacy in the AFC South. Give me the Jacksonville Jaguars as my lock of the week.
I like it. The AFC South is much like the NFC North, and that is they're going to cannibalize each other, and somebody's going to have to win that division, and they're going to host a playoff game just like possibly the Bucs or the Panthers. In fact, Panthers control their own destiny because they do play the Buccaneers one more time, and they've already beat them. So if the Panthers win the division, what a, you know, wow for – I mean – wow for Steve Wilkes. Can you win coach of the year if you don't start until midway through the season? I mean, I got to think that. And that was one thing that I was going to mention that we didn't get to. And that's, you know, you don't hear Kyle Shanahan's name getting mentioned as a possible coach of the year candidate. I just don't know any other teams that you can say, here, we're giving you your backup quarterback in week two, and we're giving you your third stringer in week 14. Go ahead and win your division. And I got to think that's, you know, got to be looked at as, boy, he can coach. He can do his thing. So maybe we can get into that in the year, in the weeks to come. So you got the Jaguars. I got the Vikings. Got to be honest. Not really excited about either of those picks, considering what I've seen, but somebody's got to win. So why not them? Jerry, what's your final thought?
So I know we're running long, so I'll try to keep it short. I was going to lay into the refs because I'm just tired of these roughing the passer penalties. I think not just me, but I think league-wide, people must be frustrated. So we'll get into that another time. What I will want to say as my final thought, as I'm seeing this cross as breaking news for all the San Francisco Giants fans out there, they finally signed a big-ticket free agent. Carlos Correa is coming to San Francisco at a record 13-year $350 million contract.
Wow. Wow. Well,
how do you like them apples? My goodness.
I mean,
a lot of apples.
Yeah, I mean, quickly as you say that, just to digest it, wow, on the number of years. I mean, I don't know how old he is now, but that's got to put him in his 40s by the time it's completed,
oh,
right?
For sure. For sure. I think he's 28.
So you're talking about 40, 41 years old. So,
which all of these shortstops are going to be given the contracts that they were right. handed this offseason.
Check in with all these shortstops in about 7 years when they start moving to third base, you know, because they're losing their range. It's not surprising that they paid so much considering they needed to do something. It's a little bit surprising that they didn't. It's a little bit surprising they didn't, you know, just go Aaron Judge $400 million. Now maybe it doesn't, maybe he doesn't still doesn't take it, but $350 million seems like a way overpay for Carlos Correa, whereas $400 million would have been a slight overpay for Judge. But you know, Giants get a nice free agent at a position of need. I don't know. Does Carlos Correa, you know, bump your season tickets, you know, tomorrow? Does he sell the amount of jerseys that other players would? I don't know. Was this a mandate from ownership to Farhan going, hey, I don't care. If you sign him for, just ask him what he wants and just say, okay. Like, it was that the mandate because of everything that's gone on this offseason. So that'll be interesting to hear what Giants fans and Giants beat writers say. So interesting to have.
Yeah, that. I think as far as Aaron Judge is concerned, I just never really saw him leaving the Yankees.
Yep.
I think the Yankees wouldn't allow it. I think no matter how high the Giants went, they would have matched. So I just, yeah, I couldn't see Aaron Judge leaving. So I don't think that was really realistic, but I think what was realistic facing the Giants was that they had to overpay in order to get an offensive player to sign as a free agent with the San, like a big ticket one.
Yep.
They needed to not just overpay, grossly overpay between the taxes that you have to pay in California to playing in the ballpark that has that reputation of not being the most hitter friendly. And on top of it, the Giants haven't exactly, I mean, I know they won 107 games or whatnot 2 years ago, but it kind of felt like smoke and mirrors, especially after what happened this past season. So it's not like, whereas the Yankees through Aaron Judge's entire career, they've been, you know, playoff bound, right? The Giants have been, well, you know, what do you have around me if I sign here kind of a thing. So yeah, no, I think it was a big win for the Giants to be able to grab, I guess not the last big ticket free agent, but I think what Dansby Swanson might be the lone remaining one, but Correa has a bigger offensive upside than Swanson does.
Well, you know, I mean, if the Giants really want to make a splash, go sign Swanson and move him to second base, and you want to flip the narrative of what a terrible offseason. Well, you go get, you know, Dansby Swanson and Carlos Correa. You got Mitch Haniger playing one of the corner outfield spots, and all of a sudden it's like, huh, okay, I don't feel as bad now. So
I don't think the Giants ownership is quite the Padres ownership. Actually, in fact, I've been wondering how the Padres have been able to spend the kind of money that they've spent. And I think I heard somebody say that their owner is kind of old, wants to win, may have had a near-death experience not too long ago. So, you know, he's pushing all his chips in the middle. So maybe that's what it takes. So I'm not sure. I don't want to, you know, make any of the Giants owners feel like they should be concerned about their lives or anything, but feels like that's kind of what it would take for the Giants to change their MO.
Yeah, we'll see. Quickly before we get out of here, my final thought, I get on the fans, all fans, Niner fans especially, a lot. For some of the things they do and say, I got to say, the last two games, and especially this last game when I thought, oh, there's going to be a lot of Bucks and Tom Brady fans there. And there was a fair amount. But the Niner fans have brought it the last couple of games. They have been loud. They have been intent into the game. They've been smart about it. My only nitpick with the Bucks fans that were sitting behind me, and they were cordial. They were nice. They were, you know, they were what I want fans to be. You cheer for your team. You're not, you know, you don't need to be cussing and doing all kinds of stuff. You don't need to be starting fights. But they kept calling Tom Brady Tommy. And unless you're his cousin, he's not Tommy. Just call him Tom. I mean, come on now. Like, again, maybe those were two of the hundred of tickets that Brady had to buy, you know, for the family and friends. But these people were sitting behind me as if, well, I can't wait till the end of the game because we're going out to dinner with Tommy, you know, type of thing. So, look, know your place, fans. Cheer for your team. Do it respectfully. Have some fun. I don't mind banter. I don't mind, you know, good-natured ribbing, you know, all that kind of good stuff. On the flip side, I will say, why do you have Niner on Niner fights? I mean, how, I guess, drunk or obtuse do you have to be? And it's not coincidental that the higher up you go in the stadium, the more obnoxious, rowdy, and violent things get. So, again, I enjoyed my time at the game this past week, even with the Bucks fans. I got to say the Niners fans in general were loud and cheering, supportive. The fact that a Purdy chant broke out in the second quarter was, I think I when I rewatched the game, had either Kevin Burkhardt or Greg Olsen talking about, this is a Rudy-like moment. You had the entire stadium cheering for this previously unknown guy. So it was pretty cool. So I got to say, despite the rain that came in the second quarter, it was an enjoyable game despite Tommy's buddies being right behind. So
certainly brought a tear to young Brocky's father in the stands, which is nice. It was nice to see.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think I heard his dad played minor league baseball or was a baseball player at some point, but either way, I mean, you're a parent, you're not living out your dreams, but you're seeing your kid hit all of these successes, and it's, I'm sure it started early. Like, you start seeing your kid have some athletic talent, and you know, you let the sky be the, you know, dream for the moon, kid, you know, whatever it is, and you go D1, you break records, you get drafted despite being the very last draft pick, you get to hear your name called. Gotta be pretty cool for those parents to see, you know, young Brock.
Come on, Brocky to you.
Young Brocky.
And if you're right about his father, I mean, he definitely would have had a leg up if his dad did play professional sports at any level. Just to have that in the gene pool can't hurt. And I just think the story is cool from last weekend, where, of course, you know, being the backup and being at the stage of his career as the rookie, you don't necessarily anticipate him getting into the game in any necessarily meaningful fashion. So his dad, I think, with his family were out and about. Also, people started calling him like, dude, Brock's in the game. And he rushed home to watch. I mean, I can only imagine what that was like, just the feeling like, what? He's in? What? How? What? How did this happen?
Yeah, so Brock's dad, Sean, and we'll wrap it up with this. Sean Purdy played baseball for the University. This doesn't make sense, so I don't know. This says played for the University of Florida in Miami. I got to think that means University of Miami in Florida. And was selected three times in the amateur draft, 87, 89, and 90, before signing with the Angels as a 16th round draft pick. Played eight minor league seasons as a pitcher before retiring in 1998 at the age of 29. So you're right. He's got some sports genetics running through that Purdy bloodline that, you know, gave him his swagger, gave him his confidence, gave him, you know, his natural ability. So we will see. We are 48 hours away from knowing if the Niners have clinched a playoff spot, knowing if Brock Purdy has moved to, I don't know who gets credit for the win in the Miami game, but, you know, another win under his belt. Niners, Seattle, in Seattle. Haven't checked the forecast, but I got to imagine it's going to rain. It's only typical that it rain on a Thursday night game for the Niners. Niners will be wearing their all-white throwbacks, so that'll be a new look for them on TV. So enjoy Thursday night football. Don't forget, it's on Amazon Prime, and I got to imagine it's on local. Is it on local TV in the area? I don't know how that works. Hey, the Niners, 6 in a row, looking for 7, looking for, you know, as I think Kirk Cousins called it, a shirt and hat, shirt and t-shirt game. You know, you get your, you know, division title hat and shirt. So, hey, let's hope we're on next week talking about, you know, starting to sketch out the playoff run that the Niners will have. And knock on wood, I won't be going to the game. So, Jerry, no need to worry about any more season-ending injuries. So that's going to be taken care of. So for Jerry, I'm Todd. Thanks for listening to the Niner Guys. Thanks for following and hanging with us for an extra long podcast and all throughout the season. Really, we're just halfway through because we're hoping that this goes all the way through the rest of December, January, and into early February before we start having to talk about the crazy storylines that will be the Niners offseason. So follow us on social media. Like us on the podcast platform of your choice. We will see you next week. Good night.